Extremely happy holidays, wildly creative new cocktails to uplift and enchant through a full year of holiday chaos, is a new mixology book that features recipes for spirited drinks and mocktails, all themed around specific festive celebrations, and not just the ones inundating our lives this time of year, but also St. Patrick's Day and Halloween and Talk Like a Pirate Day. Written by Devin McEwen, a home bartender and debut author, the book is illustrated by his mom, best-selling children's book author Sandra Boynton. In November, Oblong Books and the White Heart hosted us in Salisbury, Connecticut for a conversation with Devin and Sandy. I began our chat by asking Devin how his mixology hobby became a book.
I don't know if you can call it peer pressure if it's your mom who's doing the pressuring, but that's how it came about. Yeah, so the germ of this book goes way back to the year of our Lord, 2006. It was Christmas Eve. I was making the eggnog recipe from The Joy of Cooking, but it was Christmas Eve fell on a Sunday. We were in Park City, Utah. Utah has very strict blue laws. And so I couldn't get the requisite rum or brandy or bourbon. So necessity being the mother of invention, I gathered the margarita fixings that we had sitting around already, and the Nagarita was born. So it's what you imagine it is. It's a eggnog margarita, and then there's nutmeg on the rim. So that was, 19 years ago. And my mom at the time was like, oh, we should do a Nagarita book. And I thought, I don't know how you could extrapolate that into a full book. And then eventually the idea morphed into doing a book of various holiday-themed cocktails. Even then, that idea probably started around a decade ago. And then finally last year, my mom came to me and she had mocked up the cover almost exactly as it now appears. And she had spoken to her publisher and gotten a contract. So at that point, I was locked in and had to write the thing, and so I did.
I was going to say, no, that's not peer pressure. That's total peer pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. But to be fair, actually, that's the way I do all my books, even when Devin is not the one writing them, meaning I always start out with the cover, and that way I have the illusion that the book actually exists. This is really true.
And once you had the cover, did you sort of have the idea of, well, this is what this can be?
Well, Devin, he's just an unbelievable cocktail maker, and I know that from sad experience.
Wait, let's check and see. Unbelievable.
Now, what is that? What are you drinking?
This is the Bubbly Burns, which is the New Year's Eve cocktail. So there's an existing cocktail called the Bobby Burns, named after Robert Burns. It's a Scotch cocktail, and then I adapted it, sort of fused it with a French 75, so this is a champagne-based Bobby Burns.
You know my birthday is on New Year's Eve.
Oh.
Did you know that?
This is now the Joe Donahue.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that's lovely. Wait, so when you turned 21 and you had your first alcoholic drink?
On the day. Yeah. October 11th, 2000, whatever it was.
When did you start becoming what a mixologist, a cocktail maker, bartender?
Around I think it was the day after my 21st birthday. I remember the first drink that I learned how to make was a margarita. And my mom was already a fan of margaritas, and so I learned just to, for the sake of being a good son. It's the only time I've ever been a good son. It was a slow evolution. It's only maybe in the last 10 years that I've kind of started taking it seriously as a hobby.
So give us a sense of what a serious hobby means to you.
I am someone.
Do you drink every night?
What are you, my doctor?
No, I'm just curious as to. The research you put into this book.
Yes, every hour or every evening at 5 o'clock, we convene to do research. I'm someone who doesn't really do things by half measures, which usually means that I don't do a whole lot. But if I have a hobby like bartending, I tend to go a little bit overboard with it. So it's just learning about different spirits and kind of how a cocktail is constructed conceptually, what proportions work and what don't. So it's a lot of experimentation and a lot of drinking.
Yeah. Who has the better liquor cabinet of the two?
We share.
Oh, you share. Good. Excellent. Do the bottles go back and forth?
Sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Now, for you, Sandy, when in writing and in illustrating the book, you talked about the cover, but once you had the menu, as it were, of the various holidays and the names of the cocktails, is that all you need to go off and do what you do so well?
Devin had a very clear idea what the holidays were and had names for most of them. But he, being a perfectionist, there were times when I needed to design the page and I didn't know quite what was going to be on it. But we talked about sort of what is the feel of this and what is... So yeah, it sort of evolved by just being filled in from whatever he was working on. Then I'm working on that spread and sort of the structure of the book, I guess. Does that seem right?
Yeah, and there was kind of a fair amount of back and forth. It wasn't like I completed the manuscript and then handed it over to her. It was, you know, I'd come up with one recipe and kind of pass it off to her, and she'd come up with accompanying art. But sometimes the art also sort of inspired, you know, at least the head notes, if not the recipe itself. So it was definitely very much like a synergy.
Were there times where you'd get it and you'd look and you say, oh, Mom, I need a chicken here.
Yes, definitely. There were...
You need a pig, a chicken, and a cow. Get on it.
I definitely did a lot of the writing with my mom's art in mind. And then, so occasionally I would hand her a page and it would come back to me and she wouldn't have done a particular illustration that I was envisioning. And then I would peer pressure her right back. There's one bit that called for her to draw a mouse adventurer, and I was very insistent that she draw that mouse. She was somewhat reluctant, but I leaned on her hard, and it eventually got done.
Yeah, that really was a back and forth, too, because then you're showing me old, like, comic illustrations of a mouse adventurer, but maybe this, you know, I'm going, but it's this big. And you say, well, that's why the detail matters. And you go, okay. But actually, that was, I mean... You know, someone already has reviewed the book saying that's their favorite page.
And the mouse is, do you usually draw, do you often draw mice?
I don't like to admit to that. no, I don't actually draw that many mice. I mean, I have before. If people ask me, is there an animal you haven't drawn? And I usually say a mosquito, but then at a certain point I go, I'm going to have to draw the mosquito, so I did that. I mean, there's certain characters that... Well, actually, here, you just turned to, this was my favorite because I'd never done a shrimp before.
Oh, look at that. And shrimp cocktail. That's the artist rendering, circa 1873. And that's just adorable. It's a shrimp. The tail is on the stool. The front claws are on the table and holding a drink.
Yeah, these are scientific drawings. I did the research and then...
You try it out? You try them out then? You try every drink out?
Absolutely. I'm conscientious.
This is going to sound like a smart alecky question, but...
Uh-oh.
Does that help in the development of the drawing, in the sense of once you know the story of a shrimp or even how it tastes or how it looks, that would help develop the drawing?
Not as much as Devin's really good at choosing the glassware for things, and I think it's an incredibly important part of the cocktail experience, and he just has a remarkable eye for those things, and that helps a lot. Once I know what the vessel is, it helps a lot.
What goes into a good vessel?
That's a good question. And there's some controversy in the cocktail world. You know, like, should a Negroni be in a rocks glass on the rocks, or should it be in a coupe? And everyone in that sphere is extremely opinionated, as all nerds are about their craft. I have certain vessels that I gravitate towards and away from. I love the cocktail coupes. I'm less a fan of the martini glass because I'm a very clumsy person and I always knock them over. And then my favorite of all, I'm a huge tiki drink aficionado, so I tend to like a tiki mug.
I guess what I know of cocktails in my experience, which isn't a lot, just being Irish, I guess is enough, if you think about it.
It's literally in your blood.
Damn near a PhD. But it seems as though I mean, you could do it in anything, but it's just there are certain drinks that, that are much better in the way that you're holding them by hand, whether it's the how much decision, ice, no ice, whatever the case may be, it makes a lot of difference.
Yeah, I think if you're just looking to drink and you're not that invested in sort of the aesthetics of what you're doing, like drinking beer out of a can is great. I love to do it myself. or shots from a shot glass, nothing wrong with that. But I think in the world of sort of like, craft cocktails, like the what kind of ice you use and what you garnish with and what kind of glass that you use, which are maybe, objectively fairly superficial considerations, like anything worth doing is worth doing well, including, getting wasted. So.
You're listening to my interview with Devin McEwen and Sandra Boynton about the new book, Extremely Happy Holidays, Wildly Creative New Cocktails to Uplift and Enchant Through a Full Year of Holiday Chaos. The conversation was recorded in front of a live audience at the White Hart in Salisbury, Connecticut, in an event presented by Oblong Books.
Let me ask you about the Cava Martini, because there is you pointed out the shrimp, but look at the squid. How cute is that? It's adorable.
Thank you. I'm proud of my squid.
How long did you work on the squid?
It came to me in a dream, and so then I knew exactly how to do it.
This is a recipe that includes squid ink. Where do you get squid ink?
You don't even want to know. There's.
I mean, from a squid, I know.
But yeah, exactly. You just find the right back alley, and there's a gentleman who'll open his trench coat. There'll be a squid inside.
Is that a traditional bar find that you can pick up relatively easy?
It's not, and actually I have a confession for you all. When I was taste testing this drink, I did not use squid ink. I used cuttlefish ink because I'm so sorry. Cat's out of the bag. But that is what's more.
Hello, second edition.
Yeah. I hope they're interchangeable. But if I get angry letters from the squid. Cognoscenti? How do you pronounce that word? From the squid knowers, then I'll know that.
But the squids wrong. Themselves are going to be thrilled.
Yeah, so, that's right. Yeah.
I think just through this conversation, I realize I may not know what a cuttlefish is. I didn't realize they had ink coming out of them.
That's appalling. How long have you been on this earth?
I don't know. You can raise a kid on public radio, and they still turn out to be an idiot.
Wow.
It's an animal whose ink tastes exactly like a squid. I hope.
The idea for all of the holidays, that must have been fun to figure out all the different holidays.
Yeah, and there were a few that kind of fell by the wayside. I tried to make an Arbor Day drink, and it wasn't working out. So there was a little bit of, there were the major ones were obvious, so of course there's going to be a Christmas cocktail and Thanksgiving, et cetera. And then, the Cal Martini, for example, is for Talk Like a Pirate Day, which is an actual holiday, but maybe slightly lesser known. And so there are a few Super Bowl Sunday, Groundhog Day. There are a few that are maybe, less universal, but that I still felt were worthy of inclusion.
Groundhog Day is not universal?
I think the epicenter is Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, and then it sort of radiates out from there, and it might not have made its way all the way.
Well, we're both from Philadelphia, so that's where we talk.
That's right. Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, Phil the groundhog. What is lovely about it is it does seem like an old friend, the book, because of your art and because of those of us who are so familiar with you, with your style, and it looks like it is the perfect, it's like the perfect holiday cocktail book because of what we know about you, what we know about your art, what we know about the humor and the wit involved.
Oddly enough, I didn't start out as a children's book writer. I was known for my greeting cards, and my first big book was Chocolate, the Consuming Passion, which is it's actually a factual book. I mean, it's humorous, but it's a factual book about chocolate. So it's interesting So to me, I'm both, you know, and I'm not sure there's a huge difference between children and adults in certain ways.
How many, would you say, like 10 years? So were there, over the time, you would say, hey, it's Talk Like a Pirate Day, let's break out the glassware.
No, honestly, like the only recipe in this book that existed prior to when I, you know, my mom came to me with the finished cover, which was in spring of 2024. The only one that existed was the Nagarita, and I'd been making it for years. So I sort of dashed around madly trying to develop more cocktails, and it was very nonlinear. You know, I'd kind of just have an idea pop into my head that fit a particular holiday. Actually, oddly, the very last drink in the book that I developed was the Halloween cocktail, and Halloween is my favorite holiday by far, but I think because of that, I felt a lot of pressure to make a good Halloween cocktail, so I saved that for last, and it was, you know, just under the wire.
And what did it turn out being?
It's the Boo Tiki drink, so it's a Halloween tiki drink. It's a pumpkin-based blended tiki drink.
That sounds good, doesn't it?
It is very good.
Yeah, you could do that for Thanksgiving too, right? Yeah. A harvesty type drink?
Yeah, I think there are no rules. You can make any of these drinks any time of year.
There are no rules. Is that how you brought this kid up?
We forgot to raise our children. We just had them around. We enjoyed them. We forgot that we were supposed to structure anything. But it's worked out pretty well, so...
When you get to work together, that must just be the most fun.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
You obviously know a lot about growing up with it, knowing a lot about your mother's art. And so as you were talking about this earlier, of having a very clear idea of what you were looking for, but I love my mother, and she's was a very cool mom. But that seems like a really cool mom thing to have that, a mom who is able to do all this incredible art.
It's amazing, yeah. You know, and my siblings and I were very much kind of her test subjects when we were growing up. We were unpaid.
Is that what you call
that? That does not sound right.
I'd like you to meet my test subjects.
That's why she had four of us, is so that, you know, it's like a control group. But yeah, so I think I'm still oddly in a way like somewhat in awe of my mom as a creator. So you know, we have a great relationship. We're very good friends, but I still am like was slightly intimidated by working with her just because she's, you know, such a powerhouse as a creator.
This is the first I know about.
Well, now
I don't want to get your ego to get out of control.
Yep. We have it on tape, so
I'm going to play it back for him
over and over and over again. I think that your idea of what you said earlier about starting with the greeting card business, even art wasn't your original.
No.
Foray, right?
Yeah, it wasn't. Well, I thought I was going to be a theater director.
Yeah.
And it's actually sort of what I do, just in a very different way.
And then when did the actual art come in of the drawing of the cartoons?
Well, I was lucky to go to a Quaker school in Philadelphia for all 12 years of schooling, and Quaker school's a remarkable creative place. It's not only, you know, intellectually rigorous, but they take the arts extremely seriously. Same amount of time, same rigor. So I did a lot of art in school. Everyone did, you know, and I did music. I had somewhat more ability in the art than I had in the music, but that's a great thing about an education where you really learn it, and you're not just sort of, oh, these are the kids who do this, these are the kids who do this. It's just everybody does everything. It's great.
When you started to do the greeting cards, what was it like to break into that business?
It was too easy. Boy, that's a long answer. How long do we have? We have 3 hours?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was still in college when I started. It was after my junior year, and I didn't want to be a waitress again. So I tried to figure out something that I could do to make money over the summer. And I'd always drawn some, and I did these little gift enclosure cards. And My uncle was a printer in Clinton, New York, and he said, I'd be happy to extend the credit for you, you know, and he showed me how to prepare the artwork and everything. So he printed the outlines, and I hand-colored them, but with a very quick wash of color. And he said, you know, you can pay me back if it's a couple years. And I paid him back in about a month for the 70,000 cards he printed.
70,000 cards?
Yeah.
Where were they selling? All over?
I was selling them first. This is a boring story.
No, I don't find this boring at all because this is pre-internet. I mean, I don't. Yeah. How do you get 70,000 cards out the door?
I went to every store I could think of, you know, gift stores and bookstores, and asked them if they wanted to sell the cards. And if you saw the cards now, you'd understand that I say inexplicably most of them did want to sell them. And they did very well. When I graduated from college, I was on my way to graduate school at Berkeley in theater. So I went to a trade show in the summer to try to find someone, a card company, to take over. And I was unbelievably lucky because most card companies said, you know, well, you have these white backgrounds, and I said, well, those will stand out with the other cards then. And they said, well, you need a cast of characters. And I said, I don't want a cast of characters. This is what each card should be its own thing. So I was about to give up, and a guy I knew there a little bit who was a rep, he said, have you talked to Recycled Paper Products? And so he took me over and introduced me to them, and they looked at the cards they had, and they said, yeah, we want to do your cards. And we did that for 20 years. So, yeah.
Was it a conscious decision to not do it anymore?
Boy, that's complicated. I don't know. I don't know. I wasn't there.
Meaning, had it run its course, or
it had run its course. I mean, they were still selling. They sold to American Greetings, and I didn't want to be with American Greetings. I wanted to be with a small card company.
All right. Well, that's an easy story to tell.
Yeah.
Yeah. You didn't want the big corporate giant taking over your work.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So are there any versions of your cards still out there being sold today?
Well, I sell them through Zazzle because people keep asking me, where can I find your cards? And so, you know, I put a lot of my best-selling cards, you know, so that people, it's a print-on-demand company. Yeah. They're there. The most successful thing I've ever done was one of the first cards I did, and I've been in its shadow for my entire life, which is the Hippo Birdie to You birthday card, and and it's been downhill from there.
Yeah, you only had like four children after that.
Yeah.
It's all downhill.
and then you moved into books.
Yes.
And then that takes off.
Well, and books and music. My music partner is right here.
Absolutely.
That's right. And we have a platinum album and two gold certified albums, and we've done some really cool stuff.
Do you wake Devin up at like 2 in the morning and say, when I'm dead, there better not be a Funko Pop chicken?
Actually, the contract's already been signed, but you wouldn't bring that up.
Fair enough. What's next for you?
I think going back to my house and never going out in public again. no offense, you guys. No,
it was weird. That was an applause line. I'm never going out again. Oh,
This is like kind of my first creative endeavor that has been out in the world. Like all my siblings and my mom are all very creative, and I'm kind of just the dumb meathead of the family. This might be kind of a one-off. I think I might, you know, I'm very glad to have done it, but I'm not sure that I have any other ideas left in my brain.
a meathead who happened to be an Olympian.
That's true. I did not medal though, so a mediocre Olympian.
You got into the Olympics.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in the most obscure sport in the Olympics, but still, I'll take it.
Everybody here has been in the Olympics. Come on.
Did you make drinks for the other athletes?
I'm not sure I'm at liberty to disclose. I actually finished competing very early in the Olympic program, so there was a fair amount of caipirinha consumption. It was in Rio, so I was, yeah, definitely.
Oh, Rio.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah. The new book, Extremely Happy Holidays, Wildly Creative New Cocktails to Uplift and Enchant Through a Full Year of Holiday Chaos. Devin, Sandra, what a great pleasure to have you both here under one roof at the White Hart Inn. Happy holidays, and thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
Again, the name of the book, Extremely Happy Holidays, Wildly Creative New Cocktails to Uplift and Enchant Through a Full Year of Holiday Chaos. Written by Devin McEwen and illustrated by Sandy Boynton. It's published by Running Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.